Yo team, I am Coyote Network News, mythological news service for the trickster redeemer within us all. Thank you, coyotenetworknews.com, woof woof woof. So some of you have been hanging with me for years, and some are just here by happenstance going, what? So first I want to thank especially Manuel Maqueda and beautiful Raquel Boluda for their beautiful presentation. We go art and then the animation with dance is perfect. We want that. Art is the antidote to human bad manners. So we are sharing this powerful moment right now. We say all moments in time await our dedication, eagerly. Cooperators are standing by. So let me introduce the cooperators. But first we have Muti. Muti from the Sangomas of South Africa. Muti means power and healing. True power is that which heals, and it is invited into the world. So we don't source power, we invite it. And we invite it by acts of dedication. So here is the Muti I have. It's coyote hair from my friend Stella Coyote, who wants us all to be kinder and better to coyotes in the world, because they represent the nature's trickster evolutionary ingenuity. So we want to partner with them. So I have coyote hair, tobacco from Syria, because it is a beautiful and beloved place underneath all of the war, sacrament. And we say, O spirit of the compassionate trickster within each one of us, open the path before us that we may be of most dedicated good while having the most serious fun time possible. Qua! Okay. So it is a powerful moment. We say, all moments in time, again, awaiting our dedication. Some things are always true, but there are times when they are truer. So here we are. This is the death and resurrection show in many ways. So for humans have celebrated, have known that deliberate, dedicated celebration of the change of season, and we're right there, stirs the creative powers of the psyche and taps us into larger forces. So for humans, for 25,000 years at least, would gather at these times, and all around the world, this kind of theater where there would be the sun would illumine the painting at the back of the cave or the inscription. And what's going on there? It's the human community inviting the power of the sun to animate the desirable story. Oh, sun, come in and animate this guiding story. This is the one. So that's what we're doing today. We're saying, and the Death and Resurrection Show is the title of a really great book by Rogan Taylor, who decided to do the history of theater, going as far back as possible, going again, inviting things in, the cave paintings, the powerful standing stones, all of that are inviting power into the world. So we're tapped into that. And in his history of theater, which he starts from far back, and he says it was always that. It was always inviting in potency. Whoa. And as we come through the whole history of theater into the modern world, and he does rock and roll, and he says everyone goes to a festival, to an event, to a concert, and deep in their bones and their blood, they know that something amazing is supposed to happen. Like, whoa. But very often, out there in the world, it doesn't. So people go, well, let's make it louder. There's a little bit of that going on here. We go, loudness is kind of compensatory, for the lack of magic. And we go, all right. We might just say, since we're here about, may our species have manners again, that's a powerful dedication, that we might say in the future ongoing aesthetic design, maybe, 2 a.m. to 7 a.m. is beautiful flutes and acoustic music. Wouldn't that be lovely? Yes. Examples of manners and not manners that we're here to redress, to be agents of that. Ran into a wonderful woman who is attending the festival. She lives near here. Symbiosis and its organization had gone to all the neighbors back in the spring and said, here's what's up, and we want you to feel included, and tell us if anything's wrong, and here's a 5-day pass. And we go, good manners. And then this woman said, well, this is a wonderful place, and this is a great thing that's going on. This is the migratory landing spot for the geese right now. And so today I've seen, two flocks of geese come in and go, oh, maybe not. Okay. So as we're redesigning the world, we go, we want to gather in a way in which the geese go, cool, let's hang in there. The wolves and the coyotes come on in and go, looks like humans doing something good. So manners. We are here to do a great mojo, which is completely possible. Pluto, not only is it equinox, and the full moon, let's ride this full moon tide right behind us. But Pluto, representing the principle of death and rebirth and intensity, is stationing now, like, whoa, from It's apparent motion backwards to forwards. So if we step in and participate, Pluto provides us with an all-portable composting alchemical bowl, cauldron, into which we can throw things and then ladle out the desirable. But we might as well go big and experimental. What about if, as humans, we were willing to give up our addiction to having an enemy? You know, what if we threw that into the cauldron? You know, we say magic is simply a willingness to cooperate with everything. Everything. You know, as some of you know, I live outside Washington, D.C., not a citadel of grooviness, on your behalf, but it allows me to cross borders and to go to, you know, to the underworld of Mordor and CPAC, the Conservative Political Action Committee, going, are there allies anywhere? Allies anywhere, even in the most toxic realms? Well, there are. You know, and again, in our hearts, as we form a dedication, the path then opens. You know, we're here gathering, you know, at this great renaissance, this incredible amount of art, and I love the coyote statue, the coyote welding there, oh, right up on the hill, fantastic art, and we go, ooh, these are things that make us proud of being human, you know, this incredible creativity. So let this truly be a cauldron of cultural renaissance that we gather our forces, but then with a willingness to cross borders, you know, and talk across borders. And then as we cross the borders, we, with our little magic brooms, we whisk the borders away and dissolve them. You know, at some point, a world without walls, a world without borders, you know, so that, again, all wildlife can find water, so that humans and the animal people can cross borders because there are no borders. Long-term vision. It's a capacity now, as we are here to restore intimacy to the world, to form a working collaborative partnership with the future. You know, I used to work with a great late ally, Jim Lewis, who was a founder of astrocartography and astrology. The idea that different places on the globe, you know, each one of us has a different kinship and it brings out different qualities. But what we discovered is, you know, going to a place is strong, but even just thinking about a place is already little molecules of ourselves are traveling to that place, and little molecules of that place are traveling to us. So qualities of leadership, say, if we begin to form a relationship to the desirable future, we start to sail towards it, and it starts to sail towards us. We're forming this powerful partnership. Because it's more than perfect that we as humans cannot get ourselves out of this pickle, this kerfuffle, by ourselves. It's by ourselves that got us into this pickle. You know, only by what I love to call democratic animism, a willingness to collaborate with everything, are we going to make it all the way through. So this to and fro, again, collaborative ingenuity, symbiosis, absolutely, culture of symbiosis and reciprocal blessing. I love the Thai saying that says, because we were never colonized, we never lost our animism. Now, this is a crucial thing. You know, the loss of animism is evidence of the colonized mind. And so many of our team, you know, activists are like, oh, get up. But what we mean by animism is everything is alive and willing to correspond with us and to coot with us. Not just the obvious plants and animals and creatures, but the microphone, the thing, you know, everything, call and response. That we live in a conversational creation. Con is with and verse is turning. Everything's call and response. So we are here dedicating to that conversation, you know, and that conspiracy. So cooperators are standing by. It's a spectacular chart of now. So part of what happens every time at this equinox, it's the sun moves from Virgo, which is the incarnation of Mercury, the messenger, and all the little micro beings, the bacteria, the everything micro, and the power of small things to change big things. I love just a little Virgo example, because we're still in the final. Oh, yes, no, we just entered, we just finished Virgo, and we are now, right now, at this moment, at the equinox, here we go, into balance. So we take Mercury with us, again, the messenger. So there's a fun fantasy book called The Initiate Brother. It's about how to maintain tranquility of purpose when in the realm of evil, roiling, collapsing empires. So it's relevant. You know, and in that book, there's a man of great leadership capacity, and he falls into a difficult funk. Nothing's going well. Lives are at stake. Plastic is polluting everything. You know, and he's sitting in his garden, and everything's off. Even the stream sounds off, like, ah, what to do? So he reaches into the stream, and he picks up one small stone, and he carefully replaces it in the stream. and the stream has its melodious voice restored, and his mind clears, and he sees who to trust, who not to trust, and how to save the world. Tum. So that's Virgo medicine that we carry with us in our magic backpacks. We have so many skills, you know, like Dorothy's slippers in The Wizard of Oz. So many things we've had all along but might not have known it until now. So we don't need more power. You know, again, we say the modern world's pickle is that it's mistaken dominance and control for power. And we go, and Pluto chimes in and says, dominance and control are the toxic mimic of power. True power, again, is invited by the power of art and gathering. So Mercury hands the baton right now, to the realm of Libra, which is the incarnation of Venus. Venus, art and intimacy. It says the artist within all of us is that person, that part of us dedicated to restoring intimacy to the world. So dynamic intimacy. So the cooperators who are standing by, the sky earth story of now, the choreography of the resonant field, you know, is potent, and let's dive into it. Again, equinox, what a great opportunity. Equal Mars, Venus. Equal everything. You know, I like saying no higher, lower chakras, no value judgment, just chakras, you know. We know in the world out there, we have the hyper-yang Mars death frenzy, like destroy, eat, kill, whatever. So the antidote to too much Mars is Venus, beauty, art. You know, we're sucking the chi out of conflagration, whether it's in Yosemite or Syria, and exhaling the waters of life. It's very powerfully beautiful that we're by this lake, even though the geese were troubled by our presence. And we aspire to do better, geese. You know, but it is Oshun. It is sweet water. It is the realm in which Venus is most potent. So it is kind of perfect that we are all here, you know, incarnationally coinciding at this powerful time. This is the time for which we were born. So Venus, art, beauty, intimacy, says the artist is the person he or she most intimate with the world, not most alienated. Alienation has had a fashion, but we can't afford it anymore, you know. And this idea of equal Mars and Venus, I love the saying a friend says, what if the idea of matriarchy is a patriarchal concept? Yeah, as opposed to actual equality. Actual equality would look like a matriarchy. It would be such a radical rebalancing. So this idea of coming into harmony, you know, so that there is equal beat and melody, equal quality. So we throw everything into Pluto's cauldron. No teaching so sacred that it can't be thrown into the cauldron. It likes it. We like reverent irreverence. And we toss it into the cauldron and go, is it equal? Can the truth be said? Is the trickster welcome? You know, is it truly equal between men and women? Is it truly equal between humans and the rest of creation? Fine, ladle it out, and if not, back into the cauldron for another stir. You know, this powerful time, you know, we draw from sacred teachings and the dreams of our friends. My friend, a wonderful painter, Virginia Daly, had this dream long ago that is very active right now. And she said in the dream, there was a difficult dementor figure stirring the cauldron. And a voice said, you have to grab the stirring stick and stir the cauldron in the other direction. So she slowly in the dream makes her way to the cauldron, puts her hand on the stirring stick. Immediately the dementor dissolves into a wraith of vapor, and she begins slowly stirring the cauldron in the other direction. And that's what we're doing. We want these powerful metaphors. We say metaphors are the incarnational garb whereby power enters the world. You know, and as metaphoric agility, you know, change the metaphor, change the culture, we'll play with that. But it's again the idea of the art of blessing is always a tangible metaphor. And we say the colonizer actually seeks the medicine of what he's been colonizing. You know, England needed the spirituality of India. You know, America needs the beauty and power of blessing and exquisite aesthetic of the Middle East. You know, but the war has covered it up. Underneath is the Venusian foreign policy. So the art of blessing, which is so alive in the colonized cultures of Ireland and the Middle East, you know, and a great late ancestor, let's call in the positive ancestors, you know, poet John O'Donohue, the basic model for blessing, which we have in our magic backpacks, is when this, then may this. When the ghost of loss stands behind you as you gaze out the window, Then may the ancestors place a cloak around your shoulders that will mend your life. And when your boat is sinking in rough waters, then may the moon spin a silver pathway upon which you may safely tread to shore. You know, and in working with many people on radio and also Trickster Training, which is, ask me about it, Monday night class by web and by phone. But when, you know, I include myself, you know, to restore metaphoric agility, people were pretty good at when this horrible thing. But then when they got to then may this good thing, it got all vague and blathery. May enlightenment, may happiness. And it's like, no, the mango, the cloak, the pathway. Again, power seeks incarnation with these tangible, sensual metaphors. Part of the beauty of right now, just to animate it a little bit, the sun overhead has just entered Libra, the realm of Venus, the incarnation of Venus, the artist ambassador part of all of us getting awakened right now. And then off the, over there to the left is Mercury, and then there's Saturn at 9 degrees of Scorpio. There are images for each degree of the zodiac. And if you look at the back of a $100 bill, and may that be a possibility for all of us, even before you leave here, handing out $100 bills, but if you look at the back of a $100 bill, there's engraved a watchtower, a clock tower, with a very specific time on it. And the Masons were pretty specific about their symbolism. So if we do a chart for America using that time, it gives 9 Scorpio rising. It's kind of the secret $100 bill soul of America. Its image is fellowship supper reunites old comrades. We go, may that be so. But Saturn, the power of dedication, is at that degree right now. Fellowship supper reunites old comrades. Part of the value of gathering, of course, by radio, by gathering, by Symbiosis Festival, you know, is that we connect with, you know, friends and future friends, allies, you know, again, people with a shared vision to increase that rate of synchronicity. Dedication magnetizes opportunity. So it's a powerful time in the midst of all of this to come into balance and to compose in one's psyche, one's manifesto of dedicated devotion. Because it's like a request that will be filled. We place the order, you know, and the gods, the divine, whatever metaphor we want to use, go, here you go, here's the opportunity. So this messenger transition of equal, if the world is in a hyper-yang Mars death frenzy, then we are agents again of Venus beauty. And the prayers that we want, you know, to honor, you know, the compassionate trickster, may all Mars be given work that protects life. May we redefine what we honor as erotic and sexy and Mars, you know, within all of us, regardless of our extremely temporary age, race, and gender assignment. But, you know, but what a culture honors and rewards in its Mars, you know, and we go, we're stirring the cauldron in the other direction. That which protects life, the green man, you know, again, this tide of resonance that we're animating. So, you know, we're sucking the chi out of the false glamour. You know, again, ooh, he might kill me, how attractive. It's like, no, into the cauldron with that, you know. Again, as a friend says, a Pluto blessing, we go, we would wish for everyone relationships that are dangerous in a good way. And what that means is relationships that are dangerous in a good way, meaning someone who could really find, someone trustworthy that one would be willing to really let find all of oneself. And we go, yes, that kind of relationship. Pluto says the relationships that can survive now, friendships and love, are those in which both people are dedicated to something greater than themselves. That will work, because we say, create theater or live melodrama, you know? And we go, well, we're kind of done with the melodrama part, into the cauldron. We want to release petty intrigue to dedicate to the grand intrigue of the transformation of culture. You know, and Mars, in all mythology, Mars is meant to, you know, be an agent of Venus. You know, part of the dynamic, you know, in all mythologies, when Mars gets too full of self, Venus, Oshun, spirit of sweet water, walks into the room and Mars gets flustered and bows to her, and the crown of stolen power rolls off of his head. So, There are some stories I've told quite a lot, but I want to tell briefly because it seems so pertinent with our indigenous allies and so many people here and so many issues. Because right now, again, everywhere around the world, people are gathering, you know, to say, you know, to suck the chi out of the XL pipeline, to suck the chi out of these things. We'll speak to language. You know, I'm always talking to our teammates about language. When we use the word fight, it creates a hot, inflammatory, aggressive reaction in our body. We're going to fight for peace. It's like the body goes, ah, you know. We're going to fight global warming. It's like, no, that's what got us into this pickle. It's too hot. We're going to engage the ingenuity of humans to cooperate with nature. I know it's a little long, but, you know, but we can work on it. That's why we're here, to work on that thing. So that powerful, you know, again, bringing things into play or balance. So, you know, all of myths, Neptune, dreams, vision, imagination, you know, myths are guiding stories that, you know, that start way back and then they become fairy tales, kind of customized myths. But they're how a culture would pass on its intimate knowledge of the biosphere as well as its guiding principles. So the Mabinogion, which are the Welsh kind of Arthurian legends, you know, gathered, they're much older than the 10th century, but they're gathered then. And there comes a moment where the elders gather and they go, uh-oh, the men just found out they have something to do with children. Things were going so well before that. But now we can see soon that the ownership of women, the ownership of children, no longer communally raising, you know, property, it's going to look grim, you know, and humans will set forth on their individual path, losing kinship, not only with each other, but with the earth herself, until the earth might die, they wrote to us in the 10th century. But then, at a certain point, at a powerful moment in time, hearts will open again, and humans will keep all the value of their individual journey, but once again open into the memosphere, you know, to be, again, in collaborative cahoots with everything. And we go, thank you, Mabinogion. And then the story I want to bring forth, and people devote their entire lives to this story, and I'm going to tell it in about 2.5 minutes, but you'll get the important gist of it. It's from the Arthurian legends. It's at the very heart of it. And how many people here know the tale of Dame Ragnall? Okay. We want to invite in, you know, all character good beings, all good ancestors, and that means all mythological ancestors as well. So the brief version of the tale of Dame Ragnall. Arthur's hunting in the woods, and he injures a deer, takes off his sword, wades into the thicket, where he finds an old enemy over a real estate deal gone bad. And his enemy says, I will kill you now. And Arthur says, I'm unarmed. That would be most unchivalrous. So his enemy says, fair enough. I have a question for you, and I will give you a year to answer it. And I will come back to court, and if you can answer it correctly, you live. And if you do not have the right answer, I will cut off your head in court. And Arthur says, that's fantastic. That's very generous, more than generous of you. That's great. What's the question? And his enemy says, the question is, what do women want? And Arthur goes, oh, boy, I'm in trouble now. So all year they're gathering from women and villagers and everything, and he knows he doesn't quite have it. Time's getting short. When into court rides Dame Ragnall. And she's described as smelling like the sea at low tide, way funky. And she's got enormous tusks, and she's like, whoa. People are like, whoa. And she rides up to Arthur and says, I have the answer to the question that will save your life. And Arthur goes, oh, that's fantastic. That's wonderful. And she goes, not so fast. In return, I will marry your nephew, Sir Gawain, the most handsome man in court. And Gawain says, whoa, okay, uncle, yes, and maybe we can find the answer somewhere else. So the deal is struck. So his enemy shows up, and Arthur pours out bags and bags of answers, and his enemy's whetting his sword, going, nope, 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 when finally all that Arthur has left is the answer that Dame Ragnall has whispered in his ear. And so he whispers that answer into the ear of his enemy, who goes, oh, phooey, and he leaves our story. Now, Guinevere thought that a small wedding would be nice, but Dame Ragnall will have none of it and insists on a big wedding. And she's eating entire boars by herself, like, and there's grease going pouring down her throat. And all the women in court, because they've all slept with Gawain, are like, oh, no. And so Gawain and Dame Ragnall retire to the wedding chamber, and they're in bed. You know, and Dame Ragnall says to Gawain, how about a little kiss, sweetie? And Gawain summons all of his chivalry and says, nay, I will do more than kiss, madam. And he turns to her and sees that she's the most beautiful woman he's ever seen in his life. And she says, you have half released me from a terrible spell. And here's the deal. I can be beautiful half of the time, either alone with you in bed or in court during the day. Which do you choose? And he goes, wow, whoa, ha. And then finally says, it is too great a decision, madam. you choose. And she says, you have completely freed me, because what women want most in all the world is sovereignty. Sovereignty given back, and sovereignty given again. And they make love time out of mind, causing the court to go, what the hell happened to Gawain? You know. Now, people dedicate their whole lives to this, Ananda Kumar Swami and so on, because it goes way deep, you know, but it's, again, a story that resonates in us. Dame Ragnall is many things. She's also the land. You know, she is, again, funky. The king must wed the land. Humans must wed the land. You know, and Jungians say, and you got to kiss the hag no matter what. You know, in any relationship, there's the hag who's going, you're not going to wear that, are you? And you have to kiss her anyway. You know, but the land is deep and funky. You know, Sappho says, if you are squeamish, do not stir the rubble on the beach or have anything to do with women. You know, again, so this sovereignty is crucial. You know, and I love an author I host on the Visionary Activist Show as many times as his books come out, Michael Gruber, who writes esoteric thrillers. They're pretty great. You know, they're always a kind of academic person with a delicate toehold in rationality, studying a shamanic tradition full of its darkness and light, and falling into such a difficult situation that they have to become their most magical selves to save themselves and the world. But the quote is, it comes from a character who's in the rainforest and who learns from his renegade priest friend that corporations in far distant Miami are going to destroy his land. And they talk about harmony and disharmony. And he says, there is harmony, you know, siwix, and disharmony. And one did not love the disharmony. But his friend says, ah, but to love disharmony back into harmony creates a greater harmony than existed before. So just, again, to put that in your magic backpack, to love disharmony back into harmony creates a greater harmony than existed before. This is the season on which we're embarked, the season of Venus. And so Saturn in Scorpio, you can see it fantastically beautiful after sunset this whole season. Venus presiding. You know, the sun has moved into Libra, incarnation of Venus. We go, where's Venus? And we go, Venus is in Scorpio, right next to Saturn. You can see after sunset, she's blazing like a train lamp right after sunset. It's fantastic. There's Venus. In Scorpio, Mars's sign, Venus leading Mars. Venus in Scorpio is the sorceress, the positive mojo, the art inviting the invisible into the world to manifest. And its degree, 13 plus Scorpio, is very witty. The universe is always speaking to us in symbols. everybody know Edward Snowden, right? Edward Snowden, great leaker, NSA leaker. So we have his birth time because you can pay $10 and get it. So his moon, when Edward Snowden was born, his moon is at 13 Scorpio, which is where Venus is now. The Sabian symbol for that degree of the zodiac is telephone lineman at work installing links to other realities, the cosmic switchboard. And we go, go Edward Snowden, that's adorable. You know, and Venus is there right now, so we can take some of the weight off of Edward Snowden in the mystery play and meanwhile wish him a secret passage to some reality show in seclusion. He's a great guy, you know, in a role, a befoibled great guy, but, you know, a muggle. But we say, let's lift the weight off of it by, again, doing this Venus and Scorpio telephone lineman at work, installing links to other realities, cosmic switchboard. So Venus and Scorpio. And part of the beauty of now, not only, you know, is it sun entering Libra, and I want to kind of bring in many beings, many people, many planetary people, many cooperators standing by. But so Saturn and Venus, you know, are there. They are opposite the moon in Taurus, moon exalted in Taurus. Again, what happens right now at this moment is a seasonal strategy. And it's Suzanne Sterling's birthday today. Yay! Yay! So she gets, this is your solar return, darling. You get to be a smoldery, dedicated sorceress with irresistible charm and a fantastic Earth celebratory theater all year. Mwah! Yeah, so anybody whose birthday is close to now, but all of us, we get to hold this in our bones and our blood. This is our seasonal strategy, and for some people, they get it all year. All moments, we don't fetishize, you know, a moment in time, you know, all of it valuable. We do want to, I like sucking the chi out of humanism, you know, just the idea that let the truth of animism eclipse the hubris of humanism, humans as the measure of all things. I think it's time for humans to get over themselves, really. You know, and again, that's part of manners. May our species have manners again, or ever. You know, may our species have manners. We could just leave it at that realm. You know, so, you know, again, humanism going, oh, we are humans. We can, you know, it's like, no, only by dedication. You know, and Venus says, whatever we love, loves us. Venus in Scorpio, the realm of detectiveness and dark sorcery, says, let us all think of our lives as though they were spiritual detective novels, in which every affinity is a pertinent clue to be honored. Whatever we have an affinity for, you know, a color, a people, a teaching, an animal, you know, then we are its agent in the court of the human world. And we do wonder, you know, what is unique to our species aside from our appalling manners? And I think, not sure, but I think the only thing that is distinct to humans is our capacity to borrow qualities of intelligence from plants and animals. And it's our affinity. You know, we say, let all natural facts be social strategy metaphors. There are so many great permaculture people here. I love Carmen Gonzalez, want to quote her more. But again, talking about water, the straighter water and faster water flows, the more pollution it carries. The slower and curvier water goes, the more it cleans itself. You know, and it was years ago at a talk like this, I said, you know, sometimes we slow way down in order to speed up. Right now is a slowing way down to dedicate to balance. And all the permaculture people came up and said, all of your metaphors are our facts. And I go, I love that. Like what? And they said, well, the more you slow water down with swales and berms, the faster it infiltrates. So I love that for a gathering like this. The more we slow down at a moment like this, the faster we infiltrate. So we love, again, so many people on this stage, you know, again, are contributing crucial things, not only Manuel Maqueda and Raquel, you know, Dennis McKenna, I think, will be back to finish his talk at some point. We don't know when, but, you know, interaction between plant chemical compounds and our complex neural machinery triggers synesthesia, he writes, the nexus where sound, vision, symbol come together, and so on, you know. And again, the plants of kinship. So we go, well, we're grateful to the work of Dennis McKenna. As I introduce the planets, let's say the outer planets represent huge forces of nature's evolutionary ingenuity, large by symbolism, even if not by mass in Pluto's case. So they're the keepers of the whole big guiding metastory. And just to repeat for many, that because I've been, we know it in our bones and blood, and I've been saying it for years, but here we go again, just a little bit of context. So Pluto, stationing now, but its image is hidden choir is singing. We know music invisible connects us to the invisible. We can call things in. You know, all we have to do is add a little bit of dedication. By the playing of this music, may this happen. By the doing of this, by the lighting of this flame, we add dedication. And we say a ritual is not some hokey thing that somebody tells you to do, you know, stand on your left foot and hop around under the moon. It's anything that we do with dedication that we imbue with symbolism. We can sweep the floor, or we can sweep the past out with the floor. Kitchen magic. If somebody's difficult in your life, you have a little rock that represents them, and you put a drop of honey on it to sweeten their heart. You know, again, kitchen magic, mojo magic, highly effective now. That's the Virgo magic we take with us. That's the Virgo magic of my favorite spirit auntie, Marie Laveau, the great voodoo queen of New Orleans, a Virgo like the city itself. You know, and it was said of her that Marie Laveau did not create cultural movements, but a woman of her substance understood what was at stake. She saw a role to be played and played it to the hilt, helping to coalesce a scattered and oppressed people into a dynamic cohesiveness. It was a moment of cultural ecstasy. And so, Marie Laveau, come on in. May it be for each person here. We don't have to create cultural movements. You know, they're happening. We want to put up our sail to catch this wind and dedicate with our hand on the tiller. The tiller is our heart's dedicated desire. So, the outer planets representing, you know, nature's evolutionary ingenuity. Pluto in Capricorn, structure of world, happens every 248 years. Last time we hadn't discovered Pluto, so it gives us a capacity to consciously collaborate with what it represents. So Pluto in Capricorn says dominance and empire. You know, row you bastards, row you bastards, running on oil, running on oil. Now it's collapsing, going down, going down. Culture of, you know, Pluto squares Uranus, the trickster. Culture of reverent collaborative ingenuity coming up, coming up, coming up. May it be so. We're aligned with that. So we want to become Venus inviters, you know, to everybody. Come on over from that thing that's going down to this that's coming up. You know, come on over. As Alan Watts says, no sense clinging to the rocks that are falling with you. Come on over this way. So we want to become magnetic, irresistible. Yes, the party, the gathering, all inclusive, everybody welcome. We want the awakened imagination of right-wing golfers, inner city kids, everybody. You know, again, it's an everybody kind of a thing. You know, everybody's got a role in the mystery play. Sometimes we don't know. Because I've been hanging out with right-wingers every now and then, I will say to a friend, what's Grover Norquist's role in the mystery play that's good? And a friend says, oh, Grover's going to take down the military-industrial complex because the good part about the crazy Tea Party thing is they're against, you know, military waste. We go, all right, drop that small government thing. Drop it, Grover. And then over there you go. Eat military waste. There you go. Remember, in The Lord of the Rings, it's Gollum's overreaching that is essential for tossing the Ring of Power back into the crack of doom. Everyone's got a role, and we're willing to, again, collaborate with everything. You know, commerce between worlds, pragmatic mysticism, democratic animism, and other things like that. So I love... So Pluto, something I've used before, but I like it so much. And I was on stage, actually, with a mega right-wing guy, kind of like a Koch brother guy. And after I said the following thing, he said, I never want to be on the stage with that woman again. I go, thank you, excellent. And I said, have you noticed, you know, that most cable news shows are brought to us by Viagra because Empire just can't get it up anymore. Everything's speaking to us. So I love James Carse, you know, has a book, Finite and Infinite Games, and he says a finite game is about winning. The outer planets are about that part of us that's about, not about winning, it's about keeping everything in play. The protoplasm of reality is especially receptive to imaginative imprint right now. You know, now change the metaphor, change the culture. You know, even you know, mega kind of physicist guys are going, you know, Big Bang might be just kind of an infantile Viagra fantasy metaphor. Maybe it really is a more of a slow unfurling. And we go, yeah, let's compost Big Bang, because that's really kind of like, oh, yeah, get your rocks off. We go, no, the gentle unfurling. And we say, let mythic figures be understood as metaphoric animations of intrinsic intelligence in nature, you know, how they come out. So we offer a template, power will animate that. You know, so everything into the cauldron, you know, the divine wants to be liberated from all past confines of human imagination. You know, may it be so. We have that. But to cooperate, you know, to derive our models of leadership from wolves, again, wolves don't operate on dominance, they operate on charisma. Charisma in wolf culture means who engages in play and who engages the dynamic ingenuity of the pack. And we go, yes. Let's vote for that as a leadership model, and may it be in all of us, you know, and may we mend our treaties, you know, by we would be nothing without wolves. Apparently, humans learn silent hunting from wolves. Humans and wolves are the only species we humans know of where the leader will look, say, at a pack of elk, a herd of elk, you know, and then look back at the pack, and then the pack will look where the leader's going. But we think that humans learn silent hunting actually from wolves. I was reminded of this by, you know, sleeping in mega loud, you know, bouncing up and down with the beat, you know, exiled artist quarters way over there. And, you know, early in the morning, there was a whole lot of galumphing going on, going, wow, do you think anybody's sleeping? And it's like, yes, and so what used to happen with humans is humans would go, oh, look, there's a herd of elk. Oh, they're gone now. Okay, but again, we learned silent hunting from wolves. We would be nothing without that collaboration. So to be dedicated to mending our treaties, you know, as we lose these qualities of intelligence, there's nothing more, you know, confident or intelligent or curious on this planet, apparently, than polar bears, because they are apex predators. They're, you know, they're the great photo of the polar bear walking along in a Russian submarine, you know, surfaces, and the polar bear goes, yeah, who the hell are you? Yeah, what's up? So, as you know, again, we want to understand we need all of these collective intelligences, all of the cave paintings in Australia, in France, in Africa, going back 25, 30,000 years. They're all depicting part human, part animal beings, that we form this alliance. You know, so I want to also honor, you know, the great richness of what's going on at this gathering. I love... I will hang out more with Carmen Gonzalez, whom I will invite on the Visionary Activist Show, permaculture designer, artist. And she was talking about, you know, time of trouble, you know, and, you know, crazy Navajo member of the tribe was throwing corn off the top of the mesa. And everybody said, "You're so crazy. What are you doing? What are you doing?" But then colonizers came in and burned all the corn. They're like, "Oh, no corn, no corn." But the trickster, the previously dissed trickster, says, "Oh, yes, we have corn. I've been throwing water over the mesa as well. There we go." You know, so the crazy Navajo on the edge tossing corn off the mesa. Edges are where explosions of diversity happen. Maori elders I've spoken with said, yes, it's differences that make things happen. We want respectful Venusian cross-pollinating, you know, with each other, again, restoring balance. And sucking the chi out of mining and fracking and pipelining, we're not going to fight the coal plant. We're going to compost it. We're going to suck the chi out of it and exhale it into the desirable. We're going to suck our complicitous, you know, chi out of the undesirable story and exhale it into animating the desirable story. So I love also another really effective environmental protector in British Columbia, Zipporah Berman, you know, who's so great. Many things. One is I thanked her for naming the Great Bear Forest. By giving it a name, people felt intimacy with it, and they rose up to protect it. There's something also very exciting going on in British Columbia, Washington State, which is the naming of that whole watershed as the Salish Sea. You know, and see, because once it has a name, people are intimate with it, and they want to protect it. Again, the power of language, that's what we're taking from this Virgo into this Libra realm, the power of language to create intimacy, and may all our language create intimacy. So Zipporah Berman was saying, you know, again, the XL pipeline and the Canadian government and all the muggles, you know, there's a museum for children about how great the XL pipeline is with little T-shirts and caps and enough to give you conniption fits if we weren't more dedicated mojo trickster people. Thank goodness we are. And she's saying what we really want to do is slow down the dementors. We know, you know, so much life, you know, again, collapsing empire, taking so much life with it, but slowing that down. And I love Faith Spotted Eagle says, "I always mention the XL pipeline as the proposed XL pipeline because in my mind it is not happening." Go, skillful use of language, skillful use of mojo. Language is invocative. The molecules love to dance to the vibration of our words. You know, so Zipporah Berman was saying, if we slow down the dementors, the forces of resilience and ingenuity, you know, and fuel, you know, sane, reverent, common sense technologies are quicker rising. So slow down, you know, again, we are sucking the chi out of, you know, Obama is our sail, we are the wind, you know, going slow that thing down, slow that Syria thing down, slow that conflagration down, you know, and it seems to be part of a cool waters of life that we're, it seems to be effective. So Zipporah Berman is saying, slow down the destruction, slow it down, again, forces of life sprightlier. And this is, again, why our ally etiquette is so crucial. Uranus, the trickster, represents nature's evolutionary ingenuity that is quickening in all of us. It comes alive at a moment of crisis, and it's a part of us that loves against all odds. Against all odds, perfect. You know, and Uranus is ingenuity, intuition, trickster, coyote, raven, all of those qualities. Democracy, equality, synchronicity. And years ago, wondering, what do those last words have to do with each other? Democracy, equality, synchronicity. And immediately when I wondered that, events staged themselves in such a way that it became very clear that, you know, if we treat each other as equals, which doesn't mean necessarily being nice, but being respectful, it's slightly different, you know, the rate of synchronicity increases dramatically. So we all have different roles, but backstage in some essential way, if we are dealing straight across, hey, how you doing? What's up? You know, then the rate of synchronicity increases dramatically. And this is what makes the transformation of culture a sporting proposition. The dementors of doom, bless their cuckoo little hearts, may they come alive again at some point, you know, trudging towards the abyss of planetary extinction, carrying the net of creation with it. Well, first we pull out our knife and cut the net, you know, and then let them tumble into the abyss to be awakened in some future Buddhist thing. You know, but But again, we're slowing that down and blessing those, you know, the mentors going, there you go. But it means they may have more money and lawyers, but we, if we treat each other well, have synchronicity, electricity, you know, the right person, the right funding, the right conversation, and the gatherings whereby to connect with people with a shared vision, and the funding and the resources and the whatever, and then to spiral forth out there as irresistible inviters into the larger story. So spirals, everybody knows how much we all love spirals. Spirals are sacred to Venus, the number 5 sacred to Venus. Venus forms a 5-petaled orbital design over 8 years. I'm moving pretty fast right now. There we go. But in nature, nature resolves conflict. Whenever conflict comes together, nature creates a spiral. So when I ask climatologists, you know, what do hurricanes want? He says, they want what we all want. They want peace. They're trying to take conflicting forces and move to the North Pole. So the larger the storms is speaking to us, the larger the imbalance. You know, and we're in this, again, time right now. We move into Libra balance. May we be agents of balance, you know, bringing things in. But it also means the spiral. The spiral is the trickster thing. It's the Aikido moment. So we don't go, rah, rah, which is dominance serves empire, even if we are righteously, you know, whatever. You know, again, the spiral. The New York saying, you never corner a mugger. You leave somebody a way out. You know, again, the invitation, inviting you. I invite you to think of this thing. Which is why in our, you know, there are so many people, again, the likes of Manuel Maqueda and people on the Visionary Activist Show who are giving us really crucial knowledge. Because no one reacts badly to being asked, did you know? You know, unless it's with some attitude problem. Did you know that what is the thing again that it's every 5 minutes, how many plastic bottles? 2 million single-use plastic bottles are disposed of in America every 5 minutes. Did you know? You know, and people go, I didn't know that. Because people don't go grr, grr, grr to did you know. Did you know is a good spiraling thing. So put that in your magic backpack to go, did you know? So to be effective agents means to be knowledgeable people. You know, did you know? So again, the spirals are the resolving of conflict. So throughout human time, you know, the essence of ritual magic, which is very strongly available now, Saturn in Scorpio, Venus in Scorpio, opposite the moon, exalted in Taurus, earth mojo, earth magic. You know, that humans were always backstage in a sense at a gathering like this, setting intention to spiral expanded repertoires of response and tolerance into group human mind. That is the essence of ritual magic, and that's what we can do by the power of blessing. You know, so we're sent. Okay. Let me see. What was it? The essence of ritual magic. The essence of ritual magic throughout time was when dedicated people would come together to spiral forth into group mind, into the memosphere, which is the realm of influence for the compassionate trickster within all of us, expanded, ever-expanding repertoire of responses of tolerance and wisdom and convivial cahooting. That's what we're doing. True symbiosis. Putting it out there. So the Aikido of public influence. You know, I love eavesdropping on my seatmates on a plane's computer. He was clearly some kind of middle-level management media guy. And the edict was coming down from on high that I couldn't help but look. And it said, in the reporting of all stories, eliminate subtlety, increase urgency. And we go, well, that's perfect. So we're here to do the opposite. We're composting urgency and increasing complexity and subtlety, you know. And that means, you know, I encourage everybody to refrain from writing in caps like, ah, because it makes you sound like a crazy person. You know, and it's kind of hot. So we want our ever-expanding repertoire of responses. You know, responses are the antidote to reaction. If we, if we love freedom, to react to anything is not free. You know, blah, blah, blah. And it's hot as well in an already hot world. To cultivate ever-expanding repertoire of responses taps us in to nature's evolutionary ingenuity. You know, our dedication to an ever-expanding repertoire of surprising responses, then we are liberating to everyone we encounter, which is also part of the deal of composting expectation. We say expectation is the partner of disappointment. I knew it wouldn't be that good. You know, okay. Uranus, the trickster, says to all of us here, I trickster, you know, big thing out there. I will connect you to the coolest things possible. Increase rate of synchronicity, right conversation, everything. All I want from you is willingness. We go, we are willing. Oh, just throw up your arms just for the hell of it. We are willing, yes. And the gods, whatever metaphor we want to use, goes, look, they've hoisted their sails of willingness. Let's go. So it's a small verbal distinction, but a huge energy difference. If we go to anything expecting, we are carrying a portable prison for ourselves and for others. Oh, okay. But if we go willing, willing like intending and willing like available, then we are liberating to ourselves and to everyone we encounter. You know, so we are envisioning. I love, and Andy Bickelbaum, the Yes Men, gave a great presentation yesterday. I love cultural hijinks, which are liberating. And the Yes Men, it reminds me very much of the fantastic children's books, the Bunny Planet books by Rosemary Wells. Anybody know the Bunny Planet books? Well, you want to put them in your magic backpack, because they all begin by saying, far beyond the Earth and stars, 20 light years south of Mars, spins the gentle bunny planet, and the bunny queen is Janet. Come in, she says, for here's the day that should have been. It's a wonder, there's wonderful children's books, and it's a day gone bad, you know, and then the little kid goes off to the bunny planet, and it's all redone beautifully in rhyme. And we go, so for here's the news that should have been. And what the Yes Men are doing, like one of their great most recent pranks is they are great mimics, like chameleons. They borrow chameleon mojo. They can look like the World Trade Organization. They can look like Dow Chemical and make public apologies. We at Dow Chemical are so sorry. We're going to make full amends to the victims of Bhopal. It goes all over the world as a news release, and then it's revealed as a hoax, but it's the world that should have been. We go, that's excellent. You know, more Bunny Planet news. When we think of, you know, Neptune, dreams, vision, yearning. You know, I'm from Washington, D.C. I'm, again, your agent there. So there was, again, a recent shooting in the Navy Yard. We go, Navy, Neptune. Neptune's called the higher octave of Venus. Now, part of our dynamic is the word symbolic. Sim means to sim means together, and bol means to throw. Symbolism. The world speaks to us symbolically. It's all symbolic. Either we are symbolically literate, we have a symbolic world, or a diabolic world. Diabolic means thrown apart. So it is poignant. You know, I have many great clients. I do astrological readings who are forensic psychiatrists. Their job is to maintain kinship with people who've done terrible, terrible things as part of our collective dream. So we don't shut it away, but we go, our dream is speaking to us. So there was the troubled, troubled man, Aaron Alexis, you know, who shot 12 people at the Navy Yards. But the news story, because everything's speaking to us, you know, he was increasingly troubled and asking for help. He was at Newport, and he called the police and said he was hearing voices coming through the ceiling, voices of three people who had been sent to follow him and keep him awake, people who are now using some sort of microwave machine, sending vibrations into his body, preventing him from falling asleep. He needed help, you know, but he was watching these violent video games as well. And the police showed up, and they said, well, stay away from these people. You know, and then the officer said, the Newport police said, people make complaints like that to us all the time. I was like, really? That they're being followed by strangers who are imbuing their bodies with microwave energy, you know, all the time? Anyway, that was amazing little snippet there. And we go, yes, so pressure comes down, and it explodes through thin membranes, postal workers, psychotic people, people entrained to violent video games, which does dissolve the brain barrier. If you're on pharmaceuticals, antidepressants, and violent video games, you know, I've talked to Carl Prebrun, brain guy, and I go, doesn't it dissolve the brain barrier? But you say, absolutely. We go, ah, so may we be people who could, again, speak to that, going, no, no more, how about no more violent video games? And what is your mythological self? And how can we guide you before you explode, you know, into some volatility? I love, there was a priest in Florida who said, I want to live in a world where George Zimmerman offered Trayvon Martin a ride home in the rain that night. We go, yes, that story. That was Greg Brewer, bishop of the Episcopal Church. So we say, you know, Arabic has so many beautiful words for ecstasy and also for crazy. There's majnun, which means crazy for the divine. So we say, may crazy psychotic into the cauldron be cooked into yearning, ecstatic yearning for the divine. And in Arabic, Mabsut Mazbut. Let's see. Mabsut means happy. Mazbut means of course. So we go Majnun Mazbut. Let's just, for the fun of it, say Majnun. Majnun Mazbut. Majnun Mazbut. And it means divine, crazy for the divine, of course. We go, yes. So we do, you know, there are moments here, of course, you know, everywhere where we just go, ooh, the sky, the people, the conversation. We do want to feel rocked in the embrace of the beauty of it all. And we want to have that as a blessing for troubled souls. You know, may you be rocked in the embrace of the beauty of it all. May you know that we need everyone. You know, something I work with, you know, every week with everywhere, you know, is that we have our magic mirror. This is essential for effective people. The mirror, we hold up the mirror to society. The secular critic part of all of us holds up the mirror to society and goes, look, it sucks, in detail. And we do need to do that. And then the trickster, trickster with a wave of the hand, turns the mirror into a window. But look how beautiful it could be. You know. And then with another wave of the hand, turns the window into a door. Let's go. So we need all of those. Mirror, window, door. So we say critique without vision is complicitous with dominance. It's like, oh, it sucks and it's terrible. And we go, you come back here and finish the rest of the thing with a blessing, you know. And a lot of people go, blessing? What the hell is that? And I go, well, study the Middle East, you know. So mirror, window, door. And it's also, I like putting the hyphen in diagnosis. So it's dia hyphen gnosis. When we critique, may critique be in order to diagnose, drawing upon all wisdom in order to heal. May criticism be intended to be healing. So we love that. That our language and our story and our eloquence, you know, be in line with our dedication. Which is why, again, language, you know, the word protest means to affirm something by grabbing your balls. I mean, that's what it means. Testes. It's why women can't testify, because it comes literally from testify was where guys grab their balls and say, I swear by these sacred things, you know, that what I'm going to say. So I go, women can't testify, but we can ovify. We are ovifying. So when you protest something, it means you're grabbing your balls and affirming it. So when the protest movement started, it was a protest against the war, which is still a kind of, you're losing energy on that round turn. You know, a protest against the war, and then the against got dropped. And I go, we're protesting this. So just energetically, it means we're affirming it with balls. And we go, oh, let's play with that. I love Dan Wildcat and his student, Curtis Catawba, who came up with the term indigenuity. Indigenuity. And he says, we've been treating life around us like resources. It's not resources, it's relations. So let's throw the word resources into the cauldron as well, because that becomes something to exploit. It's relations, it's intimacy. So I love, again, you know, and Tim Ream also on this stage, you know, talked about singing back the wolves. You know, the hardcore scientists are, in fact, true mystics. You know, when the ongoing BP catastrophe in the Gulf, which will take 100,000 years to resolve, you know, but when it began, there was a great TEDx of deep, deep ocean scientists, and they were weeping. The scientists were weeping. It's like a tarot card. Again, everyone's heart is moved. You know, and when Manuel is speaking about the work of our great friend Chris Jordan photographing the birds, the albatross on Midway Island, who are in their death throes as they decay, we can see all of our detritus from culture, you know, in their bodies from top to bottom, cigarette lighters and toothbrushes and all of that. And the photo, again, it is online. You can look at the trailer. But it does bring us to our knees going, oh my God, we've got to change our hearts. And I love also my friend Deborah Felmuth from Syria. So beautiful underneath all of that conflagration. Let's suck the chi and have the women rise up with the mojo medicine of beauty and art. You know, but we engaged in what I began to call blessing poker. Because again, Syria was, and may it be again, you know, I spent beautiful time there, where all day long it is reciprocal blessing. When you get a meal, your waiter says, anything else, madam? And you go, salam tek, only your peace. I love, you know, to and fro, you know. So, Islamu Idain, may the divine bless your hands that have made such beauty. You can say that every 20 minutes. So we've engaged in blessing poker, because she would say in the morning, you know, people say, what color are you today? And the answer is always, Alhamdulillah, all praise the divine. which for me is useful, because when people say, hey, how's it going, you know, or hey, what's happening, it's an easy question to ask, but it's really a burden to answer. It's like, well, I don't know, you know. But you can just go, alhamdulillah, and then you're off the hook. So what color are you today? Alhamdulillah. So blessing poker, you know, when you wake up, may the angels dust your path with rose flowers. And then you go, I see your blessing and raise you one. When you wake up, may the angels dust your path with rose flowers and birds waft, you know, orange scent around you. And I see your blessing and raise you one. When you wake up, may there be orange blossoms and rose petals and whatever. And may your beloved kiss you on the neck just where you like it, you know, right before coffee and figs. I see that and raise, you know, keeping it going. We want blessing Olympics, blessing Olympics. Because we know that from psychoimmunologists that lamenting can freeze action. You know, and that scripts, the quote from this particular interesting scientist, he said, scripts of deprivation and shame, abandonment, and betrayal create an inflammatory, toxic reaction in the body. You know, and we go, whoa, yes, that makes sense. So it inflames, you know, and freezes our biological capacity to respond. So changing the stories is crucial. There we go. So, you know, we go mythic news. The coyote trickster within all of us says, by tossing lightning into the closed loop of the story circle, coyote creates a liberating spiral, an all-inclusive liberating spiral, irresistible. You know, and one of the scientists, the deep ocean scientists at the TED Talk, TEDx talk after the ongoing Gulf cataclysm, you know, deep ocean scientist Rick Gallo, who said, it's terrible, you know, it's terrible what's going on, but keep in mind that at the bottom of the ocean, the deepest, there's more biodiversity there than anywhere on the planet. There's rivers and waterfalls and teeming with life, and there are these vents blowing new life into creation. You know, just, you know, it's again, I forget what the phrase is. I lost it in my notes here, but it's biogenesis. So it's like there's this new life, there's death, and there's new life coming in. So we have linguistic biogenesis as well that we're, you know, honored to be a part of. So in storytelling, we know, you know, part of Jupiter, the storytelling god, who's part of this whole beautiful design, you know, it says, storytelling is, you know, a five-act structure. Act one is here we are. Act two is away. Act three is oops. Act four is evil. And act five is the blessing, the kiss, the wedding, the redemption. I like, you know, there's a lot of resonance to the 60s. So, but here's where we're transforming that, again, through more intimacy, through more true equality between Mars and Venus. So there used to be the power fist, right? Like, rah, 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 rah. We go, that had its place. But now we're doing the power fist into an unfurling palm of blessing. May it go well for you. And people respond on mythological levels. When I went to the tar sands pipeline, sucked the chi out of that thing, you know, I brought Obama's chart, you know, like I always do, you know, and working with my team on Monday nights, we were saying, may the ancestors, including your mother, your spectacular mother, place a cloak of guiding earth wisdom around your shoulders and a council of wise wolves to protect you from bad influence. You know, and we go, poof. And at that moment, he steps out of the White House and goes, yeah, I'm with you. And we go, many levels on which things are operating. Whatever we speak to, we're inviting that part out. People can go, I'm so disappointed in Obama. And it's like, could you find another bleeping word than disappointed? It's like a talking point. You could go bamboozled or whatever, you know, but disappointed, which means, dis means underworld. And appointed, every time somebody says I'm disappointed, it means I am powerless in the underworld. It is not a useful spell to bespell ourselves. So we go, power fist into blessing. Power fist into blessing. You know, it is ours to design the irresistible story. So we will finish by saying, I'm not ashamed that I got this quote from Dan Brown in his pretty interesting book, actually, which is The Inferno. Got a very interesting twist on it. But it's the opening lines of the Odyssey, in which Homer says, sing in me, O muse, and through me tell the story. So let's do that together. Sing in me, O muse. Sing in me, O muse, and through me tell the story. Through me tell the story. One more time together. Sing in me, O muse, and through me tell the story. Thank you, team, for doing this good work. Mwah. Thank you, team.